couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show is a bit of a diversion from what we normally do because I am in Jerusalem covering the Jerusalem Film Festival, deep in the heart of Israel, taking up the foreign sites, taking up a new land, getting to know new people, broadening the mind, and seeing movies as well, and doing a bunch of really cool tours. We'll be talking about that later, and of course, next week as well. In the meantime, we're also going to talk about the new movies like Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Boyhood, and The Class of 92, which is actually an old movie that's kind of come back for a bit, timed with the World Cup. There's also going to be news and some box office predictions, the DVD roundup, and an early report from the Jerusalem Film Festival. But if you want to get a hold of me in the meantime, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or on facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. Finally, if you want to reach me on Twitter, go to twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Thank you, Ron Burgundy. Let's talk about the news. There's some interesting stuff that's happened this week. Weird development moves. I'm not a big fan of following development news because I really don't believe movies are happening until they are actually honest to God happening and the cameras are rolling. Film doesn't always roll through the cameras anymore. But there's also some stuff about ratings. Let's start off, though, with some early development news. Harry Potter is getting a resurgence. Not only are they developing Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which is of course, a book that J.K. Rowling's wrote, and they want to develop in another movie because Harry Potter made $586 billion. She also has a new story that she published on, what is it called, Potterheads? Potter World. It's a reunion of Dumbledore's army, and it's about the 34-year-old Harry Potter and the other wizards getting together and sort of having a reunion. I haven't read it because I am not a part of the wizarding world of Harry Potter. I mean, I like the movies. They're neat and all. My biggest problem with this, and I guess associated with the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the saga's over. You had 7 books. You had 8 movies. It ends. And it's sort of like when they made a sequel to Highlander, and it very clearly ends at the end of the movie Highlander. And then they made a sequel because it did so well, at least relatively speaking, for that movie at the time. Harry Potter, it begins and ends. And at the end of the book, even when you get to the end of The Deathly Hallows, he basically says, I've never felt the danger ever again. Voldemort was vanquished, we got to the end, and we're done. I think this really only serves the people who want to live in this world, the people who wrap themselves around it and take total comfort in it. I'm sure Fantastic Beasts can be fun, because they're already starting to work on some images and production design, and they're talking about making 3 films out of that. And maybe if they could find something compelling outside of that, but it's not going to be this epic battle between good and evil that stretches across the entire world. Are we going to continue Harry Potter? What are they going to talk about their prostate exams or something like that? That just, to me, is silly. That's my take on that. Weinsteins, here's another interesting piece of development news. The Weinsteins have passed on Clerks 3, which Kevin Smith has written a script. He showed it to the Weinsteins. He said it's going to cost $6 million, and the Weinsteins went, that's a little too rich for our blood. And here's why it's a good thing. Kevin Smith has already started to branch out and do other things. He's been beaten down enough that says, hey, your pot jokes and your sex humor and your homophobia is no longer funny in this century. It was very funny in 1994. It just doesn't work nowadays. And you're in your 40s. You're a father. You shouldn't be clinging around Clerks. I mean, Clerks, again, maybe the 40-some-year-old Clerks can go meet with the 30-some-year-old Harry Potter and talk about, you know, prostate exams and that sort of thing. You know, as much as I like the Clerks franchise, I think it's the best work that Kevin Smith does. It's not worth getting another movie. I think it's a good thing that they passed on Clerks 3 because they have control over the property. And so they'll distribute it, they said, but they're not going to fund it. Another interesting piece of development news is they're talking about having Mark Wahlberg play the $6 million man, which I think is funny on several reasons because, first of all, it would probably be at least a $60 million man by now because, I mean, what, $6 million? I'm sure that there are people walking around today that have bionics in them that cost in the range of $6 million. So $6 million is not that much. So it's going to have to be more. They can call him the bionic man. I don't know. This could be interesting. I think Mark Wahlberg is on a roll, so that's a good thing. Now, a couple pieces of release news. You got Fast and Furious 7 finally got a release date. It moved from July this year. Obviously, it's not coming out this week. They moved it to April of 2015, which is interesting on a couple points because, first of all, it is not a summer release date, and they're pushing the early April. After how well Captain America did, I think they want to get this to do well. And that's actually always been a good time. In the month of April has been a good time to release the Fast and Furious. I don't think they got a significant bump by releasing the other one on Memorial Day, so they're going back to the tried and true release window. Finally, a couple PG-13 news. Expendables 3 is officially PG-13 and people are losing their mind over it. They're still losing their mind over it. On top of it, Guillermo del Toro has come out and said that they could make Mountains of Madness, which was originally crushed in the idea stage because it would be an R-rated, like $180 million feature. They said if they do a PG-13, they might actually do it. I don't think, I've read Mountains of Madness. It's been a while, but I've read it. I don't think that relies on super gory effects. It relies on cool effects, but it does not need to be that violent. It doesn't need to be overtly, you know, it's not a slasher movie. It's more of a thinking man's monster movie. So it doesn't need to be R. It doesn't need to be R. Say, and now, the Expendables, yeah, I know a lot of people like the bloody explosions, but the reality is, some of these films that they say, oh, were so violent back in the 80s, some of those might have gotten a PG-13 rating even in the 80s. Well, like something like Red Dawn was an action movie, and it was the first PG-13 rated movie. So I'm not against the PG-13 rating, and I understand if you want to make it massively marketable and they're trying to make it a little more friendly to a wider audience, PG-13 is the way you got to go. All right, we need to move on. That sound means we're moving into the trailer park. There's actually a bunch of trailers I want to talk about. I just don't have time to, and I have to pick two. So the first one I'm going to pick is a smaller release. It's called St. Vincent, and it stars Bill Murray and Melissa McCarthy and Naomi Watts. And it's a typical story of this grumpy old man who befriends Melissa McCarthy's son. So here's the trailer.
I'm Maggie. I guess I'm your new neighbor.
So?
Well, we're moving in.
I can watch the kid after school. I can do $11 an hour.
Let's go!
Here's a dime. Call your mom.
Costs more than a dime.
All right. Here. Costs more than that. Call collect.
You like him?
He's interesting. In a gotcha sort of way.
Hey, look. It's Oliver.
You need to defend yourself or you get mowed down.
Get out.
He's small if you haven't noticed.
And so is Hitler.
That's a horrible comparison.
When this dropped not too long ago, I was told by a bunch of people, I have to see this because I've been complaining about Melissa McCarthy. Now, she's very small in this movie. She's not a big part. She shows up only 3 or 4 times in the trailer. It's mostly Bill Murray's movie, and it's mostly the kid who plays her son. She plays the mom. And when I said to people, when I lament about the fact that Melissa McCarthy is doing stuff that is just rehashing other stuff she's done, I said, I'd like to see her do something different. And while this isn't a complete 180-degree turn, I mean, she's not playing a cute little bubbly kid like she did on Samantha Who, which she was adorable on. She is not playing just this foul-mouthed, obnoxious, crazy social pariah. She's playing a single mom trying to live her life and trying to raise the kid right and questioning some of the crazy things that Bill Murray does. So I was told I should see this trailer because I complain about Melissa McCarthy a lot, especially recently. And it looks good. I mean, it's not her movie as much as it is Bill Murray's and the kid who plays her son. So it could be pretty good. I'm at least cautiously, optimistically looking forward to this one. St. Vincent opens on October 24th. The next one I want to talk about is Exodus, Gods and Kings. It's directed by Ridley Scott. Has a big holiday push on December 12th is when it opens.
Moses. Ramesses. When I look at you, I still see the two boys who grew up together, close as brothers.
I came here to tell you that something is coming that is out of my control.
This thing got a lot of laughs on the internet. Part of it is because Joel Edgerton looks like... Have you ever seen those that website where it has bad painted on eyebrows on people? He looks ridiculous in here. And it looks kind of like the effects maybe not be done yet, or they haven't done enough work on it. It's so hard to get wrapped up into the big budget version of this stuff. And you might, he did Gladiator. Ridley Scott did Gladiator, 14 years ago? That does not mean that this one's going to top it. So I don't know. Exodus, Gods and Kings, I'm not quite sold on. And I think maybe Batman, Christian Bale can stop him. Anyways, I need to go to a break. When we come back, I'm going to be talking about Boyhood and Class of 92.
Because we can, can!
Everybody, yeah, yeah.
Kevin Carr here from Fat Guys in the Movies, still coming at you. We are going to be talking about a couple movies. I'm going to be honest with you, I haven't seen one of these because I've been traveling this week trying to get to Israel and Jerusalem. So I can't render the full review that I normally do, and my apologies to everyone for that. But even though I pride myself on trying to review as many movies as I can, obviously travel schedules and international flights took precedence. This first movie is Boyhood, and it is directed by Richard Linklater, who took 12 years to film this movie about a boy who literally grows up on screen and weathers the challenges of becoming an adult.
You guys ready to have some fun?
Yeah!
Yeah! Don't worry about it.
Looks like you used the bumpers.
You don't want the bumpers. Life doesn't give you bumpers.
Have you been hurting?
A little bit.
Oh, okay.
Who do you want to be, Mason? What do you want to do?
I'm going to just preface this by saying I'm not a big Richard Linklater fan. I never have been. I have not seen School of Rock. I know I should. I just have. It's one of them I haven't seen. But everything else of his, I've been like, eh, it's okay. I thought Bernie was fine. But I've never been a big fan of the Before After Sunset series. And didn't he just do After Midnight or whatever, Before After Midnight? He did one just last year. They're not my cup of tea. They're very Richard Linklater because he's a lot about people talking. And even if you go back to his first film that broke him into the public consciousness, Slacker is just a bunch of people talking. And there's nothing wrong with that. And there's a lot of people who love it. And a lot of people love the Ethan Hawke, Julia Delpy team up. And Ethan Hawke is, of course, in this one. The real star is the kid who grows up. And I, like I said, I haven't seen it, but it's getting incredibly huge reviews. I mean, it's at 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is, it'll eventually not be, because you'll always get that one guy who wants to give the bad review or who genuinely doesn't like it, which is why I'm a little bit worried about reviewing it myself, because I've been that guy who has busted 100% reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. I did that with Say Anything. I got more hate mail for Say Anything because I didn't like it. And it had been sitting at 100% and nobody was reviewing it because it had come out and the only people who reviewed it. So it had like 30 reviews and I got it on Blu-ray. I watched it. I'm like, yeah, it was okay. And I 2.5 star, boom. And it went down to 99 or 98%. And I got hate mail for it. I also got hate mail for not liking Sunset Boulevard. I mean, so I get hate mail all the time for people who don't agree with my reviews. But right now it's at 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's at 8.9 out of 10 on IMDb. It's at 94% on Metacritic. This is a huge, hugely well-reviewed movie. I will probably end up watching it when award season rolls around and I get a screener at home. So I'll probably talk about it in December, and I'm sure it's going to get nominated for a bunch of independent awards. I think it's a fascinating thing to do. And I totally support Linklater in doing it and making a movie that takes place over the course of 12 years and actually coherently putting it together and making a story. That's a monumental effort. And kudos to him, because I've been reviewing films for about 12 years. That gives me a perspective. My son is 13 years old. So his entirety of his life, Linklater's been working on this movie. And this hasn't been something where he's been, you know, just struggling to get this movie made. And he does it on weekends or evening. They plan this out. Then this is a fascinating concept. It is almost 3 hours long, and that might be a little bit rough. I'm not terribly looking forward to that. It doesn't have let's just call them the benefits of the 3-hour movie from last year, Blue is the Warmest Color. It's not the same. And I'm just going to share a quote from Ed Douglas, friend of mine and friend of the show. The Weekend Warrior from ComingSoon.net. This is what he had to say. This is his quote for Boyhood, and I just want to share this with you. With a brilliant filmmaking experiment that works beyond belief, Linklater continues to prove himself as one of the strongest character-driven filmmakers out there. And I know Ed is a big fan of his stuff. He loves the Hawke Delpy series, Before, After, Midnight, Sunset, Waking Up, Bed, all that good stuff. This is a crowd it's for. And if it's opening near you and you like that sort of thing, go see this movie, because I think you'll like it. So I can't render an actual verdict for myself because I haven't seen it. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. We are moving on to The Class of 92. Now, this movie actually came out last year, and it's been on DVD. It's been available on DVD since December, I think, of 2013. But they brought it back, and you'll see why. This is a documentary that looks at the stunning six players of Manchester United who came from everyman working class backgrounds to be football stars in Europe.
Music was changing. Politics was changing. Football was changing.
was this surge, this tidal wave of culture.
Everything just literally erupted.
It was a great generation.
You had a young band, Oasis, just ruling the world.
It just seemed like the magic dust literally had been sprayed all over the city.
There's some great northern cities that actually aren't beholden to anyone. Now, the football teams, of course, especially United, is a symbol of that.
This one opened, and I think it's just very limited, opened this week, July 8th. It's aligned with World Cup, even though this is about Manchester United and they were going for the Europe Cup. And this is the team, if you don't know anything about soccer or football, this is the team that David Beckham played for. And this is the group he played for. This is sort of like the English version, the Manchester version of like the Pittsburgh Steelers powerhouse days in the 70s. Or what was that string of wins the Dallas Cowboys had in the 90s with Troy Aikman. I do not follow soccer. And I watched this movie, and it's a very finely made documentary. It's very well done, very in-depth, lots of interviews, lots of archival footage, interviews with the players, interviews with people who knew the players, and even famous people. They got like Tony Blair on there, and they got Danny Boyle talking about it. This is a well-made documentary, but it all was just completely noise to me because I don't follow soccer. I don't even follow American football, for crying out loud. As I'm watching this documentary, it's just, because it's also, not only is it about football or soccer, European football, all these people have like thick Manchester accents. They're these real thick, you know, British accents or Scottish accents and a bunch of different types. And it was very hard to follow, even with the subtitles on, and it was just hard to watch. So, but that's just me, because I don't know anything about this. I don't even know who these people are. I recognize David Beckham, and which kind of proves the point of one of the things they were trying to make in the film. But ultimately, this is how I feel. I found this clip from the internet. This is how I feel when people talk, especially about the World Cup. And this is how I feel about that. And I feel about this about American football season, too, but even more so on the World Cup because I'm so removed.
Hooray, he's kicked the ball. Now the ball's over there. That man has it now. That's an interesting development. Maybe he'll kick the ball. He has indeed, and apparently that deserves a round of applause.
Will you shut up? They're going to hear you.
This is the worst thing in the world.
What could I do? He bought the tickets on the phone when we were in the pub. I could hardly say no, could I?
Can I use this?
I don't know.
Come on, they're singing! They're singing! Maybe we should sing!
Just promise me we won't do anything else with them. I want to go back to being weird. I like being weird. Weird's all I've got. That and my sweet style.
Okay, look, we'll make our excuses when the match is over. How long do football matches last?
A billion hours, apparently.
That is, of course, the IT crowd. That is Moss and Roy at a football match and not knowing anything about the game. And just struggling there because they have friends who are dudes who they want to still be friends with and enjoy themselves. And that's what they're stuck with. So that's how I feel. Yes. And this documentary was like a billion hours long, but it's a well-made documentary. So I'm actually going to give it a rating of kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right. With that, we need to go to a break. We're going to be talking about apes and various other things in the time to come. Kevin Carr here with Fat Guys of the Movie, still coming back at you. We are doing live reports here from the Jerusalem Film Festival. Wanted to update you on a little bit, not a whole lot to talk about because I just got here right at the beginning of the festival. In fact, landing on the first day of it, and they were originally going to be screening a film called Dancing Arabs. That was its opening night selection. There's going to be a gala and a big reception before. For security reasons, they moved it to next week. So while there was a little bit of a reception and we got to mingle and see some of the other people involved in the festival, we did not get the big gala. And a lot of this is because of the tensions that are happening, not necessarily in Jerusalem, but farther south. But of course, the Israelis take their security extremely seriously. I mean, you think that the TSA takes things seriously. I mean, the Israelis, they don't mess around. And that's because they're surrounded by trouble spots, we'll say. But this is not an unusual thing to happen in this area of the world. So, but I mean, overall, it's a beautiful city. You had a chance to walk around a little bit. Our hotel is very close to the King David, which is a very famous hotel, even cinematically. And when I open my window of my hotel room, I'm looking over this gorgeous dome and this pillar, and I'm like, this must be a church. No, it's a YMCA. It's the YMCA of Jerusalem. And I mean, it looks just amazing. And of course, on our way down to the Cinematheque, you can see the old city in the background, and you can see where supposedly most people believe the Last Supper took place. And the amount of historical significance just steeped in this area is pretty astounding. So I consider myself extremely lucky to be here, even with some tensions. And our contacts here in Jerusalem, they're very proud of their Iron Dome system, and it's been put to the test a couple times this past week. And while there have been an occasional siren or two, it is still not something that's looks like it's becoming a problem. It's a beautiful city. The film festival is moving along as planned. And I am looking forward to sampling a lot of what the Israeli cinema scene has to offer, because there is a lot of film. There are a lot of films playing at this festival that hopefully will broaden the mind. And while these aren't overly well known outside of the area, there is a significant push to continue and build and foster a strong Israeli cinema. And that is fantastic because, you know, I mean, not to sound too cheesy, but art does broaden the mind, and it does give a country and the individuals a chance of expressing themselves. So yes, it's a Jerusalem Film Festival, which is in its 31st year. So it's the 31st annual Jerusalem Film Festival. Again, making it a very, very significant piece of culture that I am lucky enough to be able to sample. So more of that next week when I actually get to see some of the films and participate in some of the tours of the film schools and the film labs. But let's move on from that into the big movie of this weekend, which I didn't get a chance to see, actually, because I landed in Tel Aviv and had to come up to Jerusalem and had to get settled. And I was hoping to sneak out and go see Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, because they didn't screen it early enough before I fled the country. And there is a theater that was showing it. I just wasn't able to get over there. And I the website's in Hebrew. So I mean, it's just, I was so confused. And I had events happening the night of it opening. But Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is the big one. But before we talk about Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, I just want to talk a little bit about the Planet of the Apes franchise. Last summer, I made a point to sit down with my kids, and we did a little marathon. As anyone who listens to the show has heard me talk about doing movie marathons with my kids, where we sit down and we watch all these movies over the course of several days, and we have snacks and short films and trailers. We do our own little film festival. This past July 4th week, we watched a bunch of Lucasfilm movies, all the Star Wars, Indiana Jones, like Willow, Labyrinth, and Howard the Duck even. But last summer, over 4th of July, we watched all the Planet of the Apes movies, which gives you a really interesting perspective. Because what's interesting about them is the original Planet of the Apes, which, real quick, this is how it was marketed. And I just want to play a trailer. It shows you how different trailers are nowadays. Here's the original Planet of the Apes trailer.
Discover Planet of the Apes. Civilization where humans run wild in the jungles. And the superior beings are apes.
As you can tell, it was a big push. I mean, it was only a couple million dollars to make, but back in 1968, it was huge. So they had this Planet of the Apes movie, did extremely well, and then they just went bang, bang. It just did a bunch of sequels, and they like came out every year, five movies, and it was very fast. And they, you know, with any sort of series of sequels, there's a rate of attrition. They keep falling out. And, you know, the first one's fantastic. The second one, is okay. The third one's neat because it has him go time travel back to Earth. Never explained exactly how that happened. But the really good one is Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, which is the fourth movie, which mirrors, in which Rise of the Planet of the Apes, when they made a couple years ago, mirrors a lot of the plot points and the elements that they had in the original Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. And that's actually my favorite of the series. And then when you go to Battle for the Planet of the Apes, that's where it's really kind of falling apart. And the series itself, the franchise is falling apart. It didn't do as well. And that's when they stopped making them. Of course, Tim Burton rebooted it in 2001. And while I thought it was okay when I first saw it, it just does not hold up. It is kind of out there. It doesn't quite work. It doesn't quite fit together. Which is why, even though that did very well, it killed the franchise until Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which is a fantastic film. And I loved that one when it came out. Now we have Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and I just want to play a quick trailer for that.
You know the scary thing about them? They don't need power. Lights. Heat. Nothing. That's the advantage. That's what makes him stronger.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is significant because it continues the Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which was originally the similar story as Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. Hopefully, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which seems to mirror some of the plot elements of Battle for the Planet of the Apes, but Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is a much smarter movie. If you look at the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is getting extremely good reviews. It is at 8.8 on IMDb. It's 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is good because when you see that 100%, you realize that that's just like junket press and you can't trust it as well. But 91% is still really good. You may see that drop over throughout the weekend and into next week. It might drop into the 70s even. But still, that's a fantastic number for such a big tentpole release, a summer release. And it has me looking very forward to it simply because what it's doing is it's showing the interaction between apes and humans. And with the original Planet of the Apes series, there was a they were held back by what they could and could not do with the effects. You still had people in monkey suits. For all intents and purposes, as great as the special effects were, and as great as the makeup was, and as groundbreaking as that was, it was still a bunch of people in monkey suits. And that can be a challenge. But if you go and watch these movies with Weta Digital, the amazing amount of work they do, we're now 3 years ahead of Rise of the Planet of the Apes. So they've got 3 years of technical development to make things look even more realistic, and you can now have realistic interaction between humans and apes and not have it look like a monkey suit. Now it makes it even more possible to break past that uncanny valley. So I am really happy that the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is coming out. I'm glad it's getting great reviews. I hope it does well. It might be a little bit, it's not that four quadrant tentpole that like Iron Man is, because it deals with some dark issues. It deals with some pretty grim stuff. And, you know, you probably don't want to take a 5-year-old into a movie where apes and humans are killing each other. It can be kind of intense. But overall, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Can't give you a rating on it, but that is what I think, looking forward to it. We need to go to a break. When I come back, we're going to be talking Guardians of the Galaxy and box office and the DVD roundup.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
Shake that.
Kevin Carr from Fat Guys of the Movies rolling in. Final segment. We've had a lot of cool stuff we talked about. We got some more cool stuff to talk about. I've been saving this one. I was going to put it in the trailer park, because technically I got a trailer for it, but it's more than just the trailer. There's a lot more to it. And this is the Guardians of the Galaxy. They had earlier this week a 17-minute preview in IMAX 3D, and you could go see it for free. Now, I know a lot of people were sort of turning their nose up at it because it's not a complete movie. It's only 17 minutes. It's free, for crying out loud. Go see it, especially if it's in your town. I mean, I had to drive to Cincinnati because I wanted to cover this thing. But if you lived in Cincinnati, why not get a ticket? They were free. Had it in a little introduction by James Gunn. It showed a chunk of stuff from the beginning of the movie so you can kind of get an idea of the characters and how they work. And then it played this 2.5 minute extended trailer. I'm going to play you a bit of it right now.
Why would you risk your life for this?
Because right now, life's giving us a chance.
To do what?
Something good, something bad, a bit of both.
We will fight beside you. I will destroy you and your world.
First, you gotta go through us! We're the frickin' Guardians of the Galaxy!
I've always been looking forward to this film. I think it's a great idea. I love James Gunn as a director. And I was a little nervous about this movie because I'm like, is this going to translate? Is this going to destroy Marvel? Is this going to be one of these movies that is going to not do terribly well? And it still could not. I mean, it's there's no guarantee that this movie's going to make money. But when I finally saw what they had on screen, I was relieved because I said, this actually makes it accessible. What I saw was some amazing graphics, some amazing special effects. It looked fantastic. And in particular, Rocket Raccoon and Groot did not look like cartoons. They did not look like Jar Jar Binks. They looked good. They looked like real interactive characters. And there's a ton of characterization and dialogue and expression from Rocket Raccoon, almost making him a bigger lead character than Star-Lord, of course, who's played by Chris Pratt, who's kind of the human face to this whole thing. And even Batista, who's not a good actor, he's playing the heavy in this movie. He's actually got some real cool bits. They use him when they need to. He's in the background. He has a reason to be there. It all makes sense. And actually, I was thrilled when I saw this because not only was it fun and it was exciting and it had a lot of humor to it and it had some great character interaction with digital characters, half of whom weren't there. It's just a fun movie. Now, a lot of people I've heard compare this to Scott Pilgrim because they're like, oh, it's not going to do well because Scott Pilgrim didn't do well. Yes. Both this and Scott Pilgrim are fringe comic books that are coming out in August with geek support and a big budget. But there's some huge differences between Scott Pilgrim and this. Scott Pilgrim, it was fringe of the fringe. It was like an independent comic. It didn't even come from Marvel. It came from something completely different. And the only people who knew about Scott Pilgrim and the even the world that he lived in were the people who knew this comic book. On top of it, it was an incredibly high concept piece that people couldn't wrap their brain around. This guy has to fight to the death these seven evil exes. Is that not violent? No, it's comic booky. It's cartoonish. But it's really at its heart. It's a romantic comedy, but it's told from the guy's point of view. All this stuff just carves away your audience because people are trying to wrap their... People had trouble wrapping their brain around Edge of Tomorrow to make it to the theater to see it. No wonder people had trouble wrapping their brain around Scott Pilgrim. I wasn't a huge fan, but that's part of the reason why Scott Pilgrim just didn't click with a full audience. Plus, it was directed by Edgar Wright, who's a brilliant director, but he's not a mainstream director, which is one of the reasons why he left Ant-Man in the first place. So this is Marvel going very mainstream with this, and it works. The other thing is Guardians of the Galaxy is very easy to understand. Yeah, it takes place in the galaxy, and you got a talking raccoon and a tree plant guy, but it's basically about a group of outlaws, like a Dirty Dozen in from jail, who have to go after something and save the galaxy. It's very simple, and it even has the iconic roles, you know. Star-Lord, which is Chris Pratt, he's Han Solo. Groot's Chewbacca. Rocket Raccoon's another version of Han Solo. And Gamora is Princess Leia. They all kind of fit these characters. They've got a Darth Vader in the movie, too. And they've also got henchmen. You know, they've got Grand Moff Tarkin, who's played by Karen Gillan. Bottom line is, I think Guardians of the Galaxy is poised to do very, very well. It's not going to be 300. I still stand by my statement that it's not going to be 300 million. It's not going to be Iron Man. But I think audiences will accept it a little bit more. And they're also probably not going to screen the heck out of it like at Comic-Con, which pretty much part of the problem with Scott Pilgrim is all the people that wanted to see Scott Pilgrim that were dying to see it opening weekend, they screened it so much that everyone had a chance to see it. And Guardians of the Galaxy, it's not going to be a huge hit, but I think it's got potential to do very, very well. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on into the box office. Talk about whether I was correct last week. I said that Transformers Age of Extinction was going to make $48 million on its 3-day, with Tammy not far behind. I wasn't way off, but I was off significantly. It only made $37 million. That was after a quote-unquote $100 million weekend the week before. That's a monstrous drop. That's a 63% drop. That's huge. This movie is doing well, and it's making money, and it's doing extremely well overseas. Chinese box office is going nuts for this because it's in China, because it takes place in China. Everybody, no matter where you live, whether you're in China or America, we're all narcissists, and we all want to see movies about ourselves. So you take these giant blockbusters. China is an emerging market for film. Set it in China, and the Chinese are going to go crazy for it, just as when it's set in America, people go crazy for it in America. Europeans go crazy for Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted, because it takes place in Europe. Tammy came in second with $21 million. Now, it had made $33 million since it opened on Wednesday. That's not very good. Compared to, like, The Heat, it's not bad, considering how much that movie costs to make. But I think one of the reasons people are putting nails in Melissa McCarthy's career coffin right now is because this was supposed to be a launch. This was supposed to be bigger and bigger. And does it, can you just put her name on there and sell this brand like Adam Sandler did for how many years? And the answer is no. I think she needs a branch. It's exactly what I was saying. She can't just play the same stupid character again and again and expect people to flock to the movies. You know, you can do Heat too, but you got to balance it out with other stuff. You can't just constantly hammer home the same thing. And I think that's what this shows us from Melissa McCarthy. Delivers from Evil and Earth to Echo didn't do well. I'm so glad Earth to Echo didn't even make $9 million over the weekend. And it made $13.5 million since it opened on Wednesday. And that's good. Why? Because it's another nail in the coffin of found footage. We've gotten to the point that the found footage movies are still making money, but they're not making the ridiculous profit. Because it used to be, you'd say, well, you make a movie for $20, $25 million, and if it made $80 million, you got a profit. But if you could make a movie for $5 million and it makes $80 million, it's a huge profit. It's an obscene profit. Well, now you're getting to the point that the found footage isn't justifying, and I think it's actually keeping people away. I think that's the reason people did not go see Earth to Echo. It had a cute, charming, lovable story that threw back to the 80s and Spielberg and Amblin. But they made it found footage, and it's impossible to watch. So this week, I think Planet of the Apes, I'm going to go lowball on this one. I think Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is going to make $72 million for no other reason than the fact that this summer has been a kind of a soft box office. And we'll talk about that in a second. But I think that Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is a smarter movie than like something like Godzilla or Transformers. And people aren't flocking to the box office this summer. It's just not a box office-y summer. It's not a huge blockbuster summer. You have these big movies. I don't think you're going to get $100 million. I'd love to see that. It'd be great to see smart science fiction do that. But I don't think it will. $72 million for Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Now, going into that discussion about the summer movie season, it's way down. The box office is way, way down from last year. And every year, whenever there's a bomb or something, I always get people going, well, is Hollywood in trouble? Hollywood's not in trouble. Let me just dispel that rumor right now. Hollywood is not in trouble. Do not start having a bake sale or a potato salad Kickstarter campaign to help Hollywood get its money back. Hollywood is doing fine. Part of the reason they have such a light summer is because things moved out of the frame. You didn't have Fast and Furious 7, which was supposed to open. You didn't have The Last Dinosaur, which was the Pixar film, which didn't open. And they moved around Maleficent. You had a lot of movies where it just had one movie and out. And then, like, 4th of July weekend, which is usually huge, you had a handful of smaller little films opening against Transformers, which is on its waning end of the franchise. This is just scheduling, and it just happens to look at the frame. And on top of it, you have the big surprises. The big money makers are the smaller films, like 22 Jump Street and Neighbors. These are movies that have done very, very well, and those are the ones that are the success stories, but they're not the big $200 million movies. And you've had a couple that haven't performed as well as you wanted to, like Edge of Tomorrow. But you haven't had the huge flop, like White House Down from last year. Okay, yes, it is true. These movies are not doing as well. It's going to be fine, because you know what's going to make up for it? Next year, the next 2 years. 2015 is insane. 2016 is crazy. And it's all bridged by Star Wars over Christmas of next year. Hollywood is fine. Let's not worry about that. All right, that sound means it is time to roll into the world-famous DVD Roundup. Only a couple things, and I got to go through these fast because we are almost out of time. We've got Bad Words, which is Jason Bateman's directorial debut. There's also Nymphomaniac, which is basically if you take the whole thing, it's a 3-hour art house film with some sex in it. Don't go buying this movie because you want to see naked people. There's also Jodorowsky's Dune. We reviewed that a couple weeks ago about the failed project to bring Dune to the big screen. And then Stage Fright, we also talked about a couple weeks ago about a set of murders that happen at a drama musical camp. Very fun, especially if you like musicals and slasher movies. The stinker of the week is Don Peyote with Dan Fogler, because is he still making movies? I thought he worked at a taco truck in L.A. Anyways, next week we're going to be talking more about the Jerusalem Film Festival, plus the new movies Planes, Fire and Rescue, The Purge Anarchy, and Sex Tape. Don't worry, not mine. It's a movie. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.